When Barack and Michelle Obama stepped into the White House in January 2009, they weren't just making history as the first Black first family. They were testing a long-running debate between them. Could meaningful change truly come through politics? Their fairy tale victory quickly collided with harsh reality. The economy was in freefall, with 3 million jobs vanished in the previous year and 3 million foreclosures devastating neighborhoods across America. Just 2 days after signing orders to close Guantanamo Bay, fulfilling a campaign promise, Barack authorized his first drone strikes in Pakistan, killing 15 people, including 3 children. The contradiction between campaign idealism and presidential reality had emerged with stunning speed. Meanwhile, Michelle focused on creating normalcy for Malia and Sasha, then 10 and 7. This meant coordinating playdates through Secret Service, learning complex security protocols for simple outings, and adapting to the White House's surprisingly outdated infrastructure. The family also navigated complex dynamics with the residence staff, composed largely of middle-aged and older African Americans who reminded the Obamas powerfully of their own relatives. Just 24 days into the presidency, despite securing a massive bank bailout and $787 billion stimulus package, the Obamas made their first return trip to Chicago. They found their beloved Hyde Park home transformed into a virtual fortress. As they departed, the reality of their new life settled heavily, prompting Michelle to tell her staff with quiet resignation, "We live in the White House now," acknowledging the permanent transformation of their lives. Michelle remained unimpressed by presidential trappings, mocking the motorcade and questioning ceremonial elements. Obama playfully called her FLOTIS with a hint of triumph. The president prioritized family dinner, missing it no more than twice weekly. While this preserved their family life, it limited his Washington social connections. Unlike their predecessors, the Obamas rarely entertained or accepted dinner invitations. They dined nightly at their round table with meals from their Chicago cook, Sam Cass. Though Michelle avoided public policy comments, she tracked events closely and urged her cerebral husband to communicate more simply, focusing on basic concerns over policy details. Their evenings had a rhythm. Michelle retired by 9:30, while the president worked late studying briefings. His most significant decisions came in solitude. After gathering input, he would sleep on it and retreat upstairs to make pivotal choices without witnesses. Despite early successes with garden events and mentorship programs, Michelle Obama privately struggled to adapt as First Lady. She faced lost friendships, felt marginalized in the administration, and found it difficult transitioning from her results-driven career to a ceremonial role. Her relationship with Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel highlighted these challenges. Her preference for careful planning clashed with his pragmatic deal-making style. The East Wing's limited influence, nicknamed Guam by staff, added to her frustration. Michelle ultimately found her purpose connecting with disadvantaged youth. At London's Elizabeth Garrett Anderson School, speaking to children of refugees, she discovered her role's true potential. "Although the circumstances of our lives may seem very distant, I want you to know that we have very much in common." 2 months after healthcare reform passed, the Obamas' first Chicago visit in 13 months revealed their growing isolation. Unlike the Bushes' extensive networks, they maintained only their close pre-existing circle. "No more new friends," as Michelle's brother said, reflecting their wariness. Their Chicago friends uniquely understood the challenges of being the first Black first family, where every presidential emotion became racially charged. After the Henry Louis Gates incident backfired, they approached race cautiously. Their tight circle provided comfort, but limited fresh perspectives. The president lacked Republican relationships and lost Democratic allies who felt rebuffed when offering criticism. His frustration with Congress grew, even ranking them below Chicago aldermen. While Obama retreated to golf games with unchallenging aides, Michelle found purpose in her work, deliberately contrasting his approach, choosing focused goals over sprawling ones and warm engagement over distance. This contrast crystallized when Michelle delivered a moving Anacostia High School graduation speech, while days later, the president's formal Oval Office address on the oil spill fell flat, appearing disconnected behind his desk. A photograph in the East Wing captured Malia and Sasha Obama on Air Force One, 12-year-old Malia gazing out the window while 9-year-old Sasha hung upside down, embodying their unique status between private and public life. The Obamas protected their daughter's privacy while allowing carefully curated glimpses into Barack's political narrative. Michelle maintained strict oversight, limiting staff involvement and monitoring their activities closely. Though Barack occasionally regretted public mentions of the girls, he continued referencing them in speeches to contrast their authenticity with Washington cynicism, as his role as father resonated with voters. That summer, while Malia the character appeared in speeches, the real Malia enjoyed typical camp life at an undisclosed location, with Secret Service agents providing updates instead of traditional camp postcards. The 2010 midterms dealt Democrats a heavy defeat, with Republicans capturing the House. Unlike Clinton's contrition after 1994, Obama attributed the results to economic anxiety rather than policy rejection. Michelle saw the defeat as a sign Obama needed to broaden his circle and improve communication, differing from Hillary Clinton's more dejected 1994 response. An aide noted her belief that authenticity mattered more than electoral victory. By 2011, Obama evolved into a more deliberate politician, developing essential skills in handshaking, strategizing, and connecting with others. The shooting of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords profoundly impacted the Obamas. At the Tucson Memorial, Obama delivered a unifying speech that transcended politics, earning bipartisan praise. His emotional address about the victims, including the announcement, "Gabby opened her eyes," called for national unity. Michelle strategically refined her initiatives, focusing on military families, a cause that resonated with Middle America while addressing service members' needs. She partnered with influential allies like Deborah Mullen and Jill Biden, whose stepson served in Iraq, noting, "Like a military spouse, I feel I'm serving my country too." In June 2011, Barack Obama's presidency hit a low point despite the successful bin Laden raid he'd personally authorized. While Americans saw his serious approach to national security matters, which he found more satisfying than domestic politics, significant challenges loomed. A devastating debt ceiling crisis emerged that summer. After April's near shutdown, Obama sought either a grand bargain or basic compromise with Republicans. The final deal of $2.4 trillion in cuts without new taxes marked a major defeat. Michelle's support wavered during these political trials, but she ultimately committed fully to his re-election campaign with characteristic determination. At Obama's 50th birthday in the Rose Garden, Michelle gave a heartfelt toast, celebrating him as president, father, and husband. The evening concluded with the Obamas dancing in the East Room, seemingly suspended in time, even as a credit downgrade and the deaths of 22 Navy SEALs approached.